Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, September 30th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Deliberations at the United Nations General Assembly continued today following more calls for the world body to transform the Security Council.
We are disappointed that we have lost the opportunity of this anniversary to address this burning issue of the reform of the United Nations Security Council.
A Zimbabwean gay activist says he'll continue fighting for the rights of gays despite President Robert Mugabe's open hatred for such people.
Regardless of the comments that our leaders do make, we feel that we're making progress, and these words that the president echoes really are not enough to deter us to continue the work that we're doing.
And Health Minister David Parirenyatwa says Zimbabwe is appealing to the Global Fund and the Clinton Foundation to assist the country in tackling HIV/AIDS.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
African leaders have been calling for the transformation of the United Nations Security Council, and some observers say a lot is happening behind the scenes to admit developed nations into the group of five, which are China, Britain, France, Russia, and the United States. But the big question is, why is it taking too long for the UN to transform the Security Council? Our reporter Standakile Mhlanga filed this report.
Heads of states and governments in Africa, Latin America, Asia, and Europe have over the years called for the transformation of the Security Council, much to the chagrin of those nations in the organ of the United Nations. President Robert Mugabe is among other leaders who this week called for the transformation of the Security Council.
We are disappointed that we have lost the opportunity of this anniversary to address this burning issue of the reform of the United Nations Security Council in a manner that satisfies the just demands and expectations of the majority among us. I wish to reiterate our strong attachment to Africa's common position on the reform of the Security Council.
Africa Union Commission Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma is also not happy that the Security Council and United Nations in general appear to be serving the interest of few nations.
I'm not happy because it's going nowhere. There's no pace at all. It's at a standstill, especially the Security Council reform. So I hope that as we celebrate 70 years, countries will take a firmer stand to say, this situation is a situation that was addressing issues after the World War, and many countries were not there, and we cannot continue with it.
Other leaders have also called for the transformation of the Security Council, which plays a crucial role in the world in issues related to peace, war, and other matters. But former United Nations General Assembly President Sam Kutesa says a lot is being done behind the scene to transform the Security Council.
What we've done this year, and I think it's just a small step forward, but an extremely necessary and important step, is to have a text on which negotiations will be based. So for Africa, it is out of these negotiations, because negotiations refer to numbers of the members of the Security Council, its relationship with the General Assembly, and the management of the entire peace and security architecture. So whether it will be two seats or it will be one seat, it will come out of these negotiations.
ZANU-PF Central Committee member and Phelandaba Mpopoma legislator Joseph Chuma applauds President Mugabe for bringing the issue of the United Nations Security Council reform to the forefront.
Our president has always been on record to be the voice of the voiceless. Definitely, looking at the events that have happened in Africa here, it clearly shows that. So then, at least we don't feel like that somebody is bullying us or persecuting us, like the president rightly put it.
MDC spokesman Obed Gutu says his party supports the idea of reforming the United Nations Security Council, but adds more effort should be on human rights issues.
As you know, and particularly speaking of our own experiences here in Zimbabwe, we are dealing with a renegade regime that does not give much respect for the protection, indeed the adoption of individual fundamental human rights. We say charity begins at home. Before Robert Mugabe talks about UN Security Council reform, he should tell us where is Itai Dzamara.
It still remains to be seen whether the Security Council will ever be transformed to accommodate some countries that have over the years yearned to be part of the United Nations entity. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, D.C., this is Sithandekile Mhlanga.
Thank you, Sithandekile. Right now we have our reporter Blessing Zulu, who's keeping an eye on the United Nations General Assembly in New York. Blessing, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. How are you?
No, we're doing fine. And now there's a lot of talk about transforming the UN Security Council. Tell us more.
Of course, this is not a Mr. Mugabe agenda. I think this is an agenda by all developing nations from Africa, the Caribbean, and also Latin America. These are countries that are saying that it has now been 45 years since the United Nations was established, and it's a time to change, not only for the United Nations to continue to be governed by only five major superpowers.
And welcome to you, Blessing.
Hi, Marvelous. How are you?
I'm good. You heard what President Mugabe and former United Nations Secretary General Assembly President Sam Kutesa and also Mrs. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma and others said about the issue. But what is your take, judging from what you're seeing happening on the ground over there?
I think there is no much movement at the time to include African states, Caribbean states, and Latin American states in the Security Council to give them permanent seats. I think it's a struggle that they have to continue to push because the five major powers are not willing to accommodate some of these developed and developing nations.
Now, Blessing, tell us about President Robert Mugabe. What's going on?
Mr. Mugabe, we had heard earlier on from insiders that he was bound to leave New York at around 3 p.m. today. But for as yet unexplained reasons, the delegation left New York in the morning. And also, interestingly, Mr. Mugabe was supposed to attend two meetings yesterday. He did not. And as of now, there is no clear explanation as to why he was missing in action.
And to round off, were there any other discussions on other issues like food security?
Yes, of course, there is that discussion to see how money can be raised to assist countries such as Zimbabwe. But let me hasten to say that what has generated a lot of interest here is the raising of the Palestinian flag for the very first time here at the United Nations, an event which took place at around 5 minutes past one.
Thank you very much, Blessing, for that comprehensive report.
Thank you.
Health Minister Dr. David Parirenyatwa says Zimbabwe is appealing to the Global Fund and the Clinton Foundation to assist the country in tackling HIV/AIDS. The number of people needing treatment increased when Zimbabwe adopted the World Health Organization treatment guidelines recommending that patients begin treatment at a CD4 count of 350 compared to the 200 count in earlier treatment guidelines. Pregnant women and infants living with HIV are being initiated on treatment regardless of their CD4 count. About 725,000 of an estimated 1.2 million Zimbabweans are living with HIV or are on antiretroviral therapy. Dr. Parirenyatwa speaks to Studio 7's Blessing Zulu about this issue.
Well, I've had quite a few meetings from one to do with, particularly with the new tackling or new methodologies that are needed to continue and sustain the fight against HIV, especially on the low-hanging fruits like prevention of mother-to-child transmission, which, as you know, Cuba has achieved completely in 100%. And we're trying to see how we can also use that as a low-hanging fruit within the Africa region. That's a particularly good one. And then, of course, we've looked at the issue of how it infiltrates into child abuse and the issue generally of gender disparity and how that continues to affect HIV and the distribution of resources. So I think those now we're looking at money for health care in terms of universal health coverage.
There's also a concern in Zimbabwe, Dr. Parinyatwa, about the accessibility of ARVs to children. We understand that 60% of them actually do not have access to drugs. What are you doing to make sure there is 100% coverage?
Yes, I think it's a particularly big one because all the partners that we have had, particularly the Clinton Foundation, which was really centering or anchoring themselves on the provision of ARVs for children, has not really covered it to the extent that we want. That is exactly why we continue to lobby each other within government that more money, more resources should be dispatched towards purchasing ARVs so that there is universal access, particularly to our children. Yes, I'm aware it's a big issue. We are addressing it very vigorously.
Right. That was Health Minister Dr. Parinyatwa speaking to Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from New York. Dr. Parinyatwa was also part of the Zimbabwe delegation that is attending the summit. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe has been included among 10 African countries that will receive assistance from the United States President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, a move that comes after the United Nations adopted the ambitious Sustainable Development Goals, which include ending the AIDS epidemic in 15 years. In a statement, the Joint United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS, or UNAIDS, welcomed the development. PEPFAR has set specific targets for preventing new HIV infections among adolescent girls and young women aged 15 to 24. The targets also include ensuring access to life-saving antiretroviral therapy for 12.9 million children, pregnant women, and adults by the end of 2017. Some of the countries that are said to benefit under this program are Kenya, Lesotho, Malawi, Mozambique, South Africa, Swaziland, Uganda, the United Republic of Tanzania, Zambia, and Zimbabwe.
Despite President Mugabe's unscripted gay outburst at the United Nations General Assembly address Monday, gay activist Chesterfield Samba says he's not deterred and will continue to champion these rights. Samba heads the Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe, an organization founded 25 years ago, and has had its offices raided and members arrested in the past. Samba, who is in Washington, D.C., tells Studio 7 he will be meeting with some United States organizations fighting for gay rights.
The main reason why we are here was to accept the award from Outright, the association that was formerly known as the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission. And they were presenting an award to GALS, basically for its work around LGBTI issues in Zimbabwe, and which sort of coincided with GALS's 25th anniversary and also Outright celebrating its 25th anniversary. So they saw it fit to honor also the work that GALS is doing in Zimbabwe to further the rights of LGBTI people in Zimbabwe.
How do you feel personally being recognized by an organization outside of Zimbabwe when at the same time we heard President Robert Mugabe also castigating, you know, the lifestyle that you lead?
I think for us, having some people that really are watching and looking at the work that we're doing and being able to recognize the efforts that we're putting towards advancing LGBTI equality in Zimbabwe, I think for us is some kind of honor that I really appreciate, especially in the work that I do as a gay activist. Also, I feel that the work that we do is important, and however way it's recognized, it's something that is special for us. Regardless of the comments that our leaders do make, we feel that we're making progress, and these words that the president echoes really are not enough to deter us to continue the work that we're doing. So we'll continue to work for social justice and equality of LGBTI people in Zimbabwe.
That was Chesterfield Samba, head of the Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe, speaking to us in New York before he left for Washington.
You're listening to Studio 7 from The Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up
in the Diaspora Forum, Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira speaks with Fadzai Gwarazimba, the newly appointed United Nations Assistant Secretary General for Safety and Security.
I'm extremely, extremely thrilled, and I feel very privileged and honored. It's been a long time since I joined the United Nations, and I never expected that I would get to this level, and I feel extremely honored.
But first, we take a look at regional and international news.
The Vatican confirmed Wednesday that Pope Francis met last week with the controversial U.S. court clerk who has refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples.
The United States says it will continue to conduct airstrikes against Islamic State agents in Syria after Russia launched its own air campaign and asked that U.S. aircraft avoid Syrian airspace during the Russian operations.
And an alleged Islamist radical accused of helping to destroy historic buildings in Mali made his first appearance today at the International Criminal Court.
United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon recently announced that Zimbabwe's own Fadzai Gwarazimba is Assistant Secretary General for Safety and Security, a feat that's not being celebrated by Zimbabweans alone, but by many other Africans who in the past few weeks have been sharing her achievements on social network sites. Dr. Gwarazimba, who has been in the UN system for more than 25 years, is a product of boarding schools in Bulawayo. She got her first degree from the University of Zimbabwe, setting on a path to trailblaze for other African women. Studio 7's Sandra Nyaira caught up with her to discuss her new position and life matters. She says she's ready for her new assignment.
I'm extremely, extremely thrilled, and I feel very privileged and honored. It's been a long time since I joined the United Nations, and I never expected that I would get to this level, and I feel extremely honored.
So what are you bringing to the table as the Assistant Secretary General for Safety and Security to help tackle the crisis in the world today? For example, we have the Syrian crisis, problems in the Central African Republic, Burkina Faso, Afghanistan, and also in particular reference to Zimbabwe, your country, and the issues that it has been going through over the past few years, a decade or so.
Well, the thing is, of course, the United Nations Department of Safety and Security deals with ensuring the safety of all United Nations staff, irrespective of the situation in the country. That task is much harder and more challenging in conflict countries, as you have mentioned, and there are a lot of those. So the job that I'm going into is to help contribute to ensuring the safety of the staff. In terms of resolving the conflict, of course, the parties to the conflict, the Secretary General, and all the other parties have to work on that. So what I bring is really a very keen understanding of the work of the United Nations across the board. I've been with the United Nations Development Program, the development arm of the United Nations for over 25 years. I have also worked in peacekeeping operations with the United Nations in Kosovo, etc., and covered Asia and Southwest Asia with critical countries like Pakistan, Afghanistan, Nepal, all that went through conflict. So my keen understanding and awareness of what happens on the ground when the United Nations is there, I think will help me a lot to bring added value to the work of UNDSS.
Just going back to, you know, to Zimbabwe, you grew up and got your first degree in a patriarchal Zimbabwean society. How did you make it, especially as a mother, now that you are where you are? How difficult has it been to get to where you are, and what really inspires you to keep going?
Yes, you're right. I grew up in a, not only in a patriarchal society, but in a society where there was institutionalized racism before the independence of Zimbabwe in 1980. And I owe a great deal of my success and the person who I am actually to my father. My late father, who died in 2009, was an incredible man, a simple school teacher and highly religious man who did everything. The way he raised us, the girls, is I never felt different from my brother. He raised me as a human being, as a person, and his words to me were always, "You're smart. I am not a rich man, I'm a poor man, but I am wealthy in terms of my brain, and the legacy that I give you, your inheritance, is your brain. You use it, and you go to school, and you succeed, and there's nothing that you cannot do." And I think I was so shocked when I went out of that cocoon of protection of family to the outside world to realize how patriarchy and, you know, gender discrimination was so strong. I was lucky also that he sent me to a boarding school. I went to boarding school at Asha, very young, at about 11 years old, and it was an all-girls school. I thrived. I never really saw myself as a girl with less than or needing to, but only when I entered the work world and realized, oh my goodness, gender relations are difficult, racism is difficult, but because I had been raised with confidence, self-confidence, it was much easier for me to fight. I became a fighter from within. And that strength has been very important. And my father inspired me a lot in terms of, with very little, he did so much. And he made me feel, you know, this is it. So I was always sure of what I wanted to do. I never dreamt, when I grow up, I want to be a mom. At first, I would say, when I grow up, I want to be a poet. Oh, I want to be a writer. And then I said, I wanted to travel the world and do this. And so those dreams were fundamental, and being a mother, being married, was incidental. And when I got married, where I wanted to go, if I met someone who didn't understand where I wanted to go, they were not worth of my time. So I have been lucky in that I got married to someone who understood me and was very supportive and has been and continues to be supportive. And when I had my daughter, I was working actually at that time at the University of Zimbabwe. I have to say I was lucky because I had a job which allows you a little bit of work-life balance.
That was Chester Samba, head of the... I beg your pardon. That was Fadzai Gwaradzimba, the UN's Assistant Secretary General for Safety and Security. She spoke with Sandra Nyaira from New York.
And a single Zimbabwean mother based in South Africa is in anguish after her only child went missing last week. 10-year-old Nicole Ngwenya was sent to a convenience store by her mother, Princess Ngwenya, in their Hillbrow neighborhood last Wednesday and never came back home. As police investigations continue, Princess, originally from Machecheni in Gwanda, is desperately appealing for anyone with information or knowledge of her daughter's whereabouts to come forward.
The police are still saying they haven't heard anything. As soon as they can manage to get something, they'll come back to us. But they haven't come back to us so far. That means they're still searching, or are they relaxed? I really don't know what to say about the police. Because ever since Wednesday up until now, we haven't got any calls from them. We went back to the police station several times, so they're still telling us the same information. Same thing, that if ever they get something, they'll come back to us. They've got their way. They follow the procedure. They don't just stand up and go do the research. They don't do physical investigations. They work with the photo and the information that we gave them.
And what message would you want to leave for those who might be willing to help look for your daughter?
I would like to say to whoever is listening right now, if ever you know her whereabouts or any information, or if ever you met her before, please contact us on 083-53-27078. And the other number is 083-237-4336.
That was single mother Princess Ngwenya, whose only child, Nicole Ngwenya, has gone missing for a week now in South Africa, speaking with Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Far too many people across the globe live under threat because of their religion or face heavy restrictions on their religious freedom, U.S. Ambassador Keith Harper said in a speech before the United Nations Human Rights Council. Individuals from Christian, Yazidi, Shia, and other faith communities in Iraq are being threatened by ISIL. Members of Syrian faith communities face similar challenges and have also been attacked and terrorized by a brutal regime. Baha'is in Iran, Tibetan Buddhists in China, Shia Muslims in Saudi Arabia, and Rohingya Muslims in Burma are all victims of governmental or societal discrimination, harassment, persecution, or physical attacks. Meanwhile, in Western Europe, there has been an increase in societal violence against Jews and Muslims. The United States is very concerned about government restrictions on freedom of religion or belief, such as blasphemy and apostasy laws, discriminatory regulations against minorities across South Asia, the Middle East, and North Africa, and other laws around the world that restrict speech or professions of faith. Ambassador Harper noted that governments and societies that respect freedom of religion are more likely to experience peace, stability, and economic prosperity. The opposite also holds true, he said. When governments restrict the free exercise of religious freedom, the result is often unrest and violent extremism. United Nations Human Rights Council Resolution 1618 provides a framework for promoting both freedom of religion and freedom of expression. The United States has contributed to the implementation of Resolution 1618 worldwide by facilitating bilateral exchanges among experts to discuss best practices in this area. U.S. embassies around the world have reached out to their host governments to encourage their participation in these exchanges. And as President Barack Obama has said, the United States will remain committed to promoting religious freedom, both at home and across the globe. We urge every country to recognize religious freedom as both a universal right and a key to a stable, prosperous, and peaceful future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will be talking with listeners and experts about the United Nations General Assembly as some world leaders call for the transformation of the Security Council. To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you right back from our studios. Audrey, where's that sugar, sugar, boom, boom? That's a nice song there from Lord Kitchener, played especially for Marvelous Mhlanganya, who is my co-host here, who's having a birthday. Happy birthday, Marvelous. And now to recap today's top stories.
Deliberations at the United Nations General Assembly continued today following more calls for the world body to transform the Security Council.
A Zimbabwean gay activist says he'll continue fighting for the rights of gays despite President Mugabe's open hatred for such people.
And Health Minister David Parrenyatwa says Zimbabwe is appealing to the Global Fund and the Clinton Foundation to assist the country in tackling HIV/AIDS issues.
That's our broadcast this evening.
And thank you, Chris, there for the birthday wish, and a very good night to everybody.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande in Washington, D.C., handing you over to Ntungameli Nkomo and Sthandekile Mhlanga. Good night, Zimbabwe.